Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world, but there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from. A curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Souther!
Hey, buddy.
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
What's up with you, man?
Not too much. Hey, what a great time we had.
On Monday.
Monday night.
Yeah,
we had... the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens.
Yeah, we had... Thanks, Dave. We had the Heritage Radio Network fundraiser gala, and you and I got to bartend together. It's been a while since we bartended together.
We did.
Well, kind of. We were in two different bars
in separate rooms, but it was at the same event, so that counts.
Thanks for doing all the prep work.
No worries. What a great time we raised. Dave, do you know how much money we raised? Is that an answer we know yet?
I don't know the final amount. No, I'll have to get back to you on that.
All right.
We did pretty good, though. We did pretty good.
Well, I mean, I know all the tickets sold out, and then, you know, everybody bought all the silent auction items. And
yeah, that's what I'm not sure what we came out to with that, but I think we did, like, something 10 grand at the door, and you know, plus whatever else we did that night.
Not too shabby.
Yeah,
not too shabby.
Yeah, good time. I was serving. I had the corgi spirits, Earl Grey tea infused gin. I was making.
Oh yeah, and Bob came out. From
I was
corgi
making
spirits.
French 75s with that, using the Cocktail and Sons Oleo Sacrum. Quite delicious. They were like Arnold Palmer crashes into a French 75.
Yeah,
super delicious.
Totally, man.
I did a maple Moscow mule with Reka vodka, and I did. A sort of a sweet, spicy Paloma-style cocktail using Astral tequila.
I did old fashions and snackeries.
Yeah, baby. That's your style, man. I set you up at the bar that I knew was your style.
Yeah, man. I got to tell you.
Smooth Ambler whiskey and plantation rum.
Yeah. Thanks to all of our friends who donated product.
Stepped forward immediately, by the way. I posted posted it out on Facebook just to say, hey, who's interested? And I got literally, I thank everybody who reached out because I got more stuff than I could have possibly used. So it's good to know that we've got friends in our back pocket.
Totally, man. Yeah, that was a really great time. And I like being part of those events where you're like, you're hanging out with chefs and like, you kind of like designate your own like food runner to
exactly.
go out and grab dishes for you. And
exactly.
Like,
you're my guy. I'm going to feed you cocktails. You just keep feeding me little snacks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the move.
It's always fun with those things.
Yeah, great food, great event, great, beautiful, beautiful space. I can't believe how gorgeous that space was, especially, you know, I've been to the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens. And I think I've been in that space, but I'd never at night.
Yeah, totally.
It's like being inside a giant greenhouse at night.
A friend of mine actually sent me a message, and she was like, are you guys like bartending in a giant birdcage?
Yeah, because I posted a photo. It kind of looked like.
Totally.
Yeah. Starry sky up above. Yeah. Pretty beautiful.
Hey, so
Yes.
I think it's time to introduce our guest. So
I think I could have smoked a whole fucking joint in that time, quite honestly. I think 30 seconds was... no sound effects for me, Dave.
So the last time...
Don't get him started.
So the last time our guest was on the show was... about a year and a half ago.
Don't even tell them who I am. Just don't.
They're going to guess who you are.
I think they've already guessed. Introduce our guest.
Sure. So from Uncouth Vermouth in studio today, Bianca Moralia. And you've been on the show before. You brought us a bunch of your cool vermouths. You brought some vermouth for us to taste today as well. And then we're going to taste something brand new. Let's talk about vermouths and what you do now first.
Okay.
Last time was it a year and a half?
It was like July of 2016, yeah.
Yeah, some time ago. All right.
Well. Yeah. So to bring us back up to speed from the last time you were on the show, you were talking about how you just bought a 16-acre farm.
Yeah, let's talk about
upstate.
The farm.
Upstate. How's that going?
It's going swimmingly. At this point, I'm growing almost all of the edible aromatics for the vermouth.
Cool.
Which is very important.
Edibles.
Yeah, you know, it's a big investment up front, but then after a while it starts turning into free ingredients, which for someone like me is very important, considering Uncouth is a super tiny vermouth company, and, you know, I kind of shot my dick in the face making it unscalable. So,
what do you mean when you say unscalable? You can't scale this, the production up?
Not really. I have to make it.
Sure.
You know, so it's changing a little bit right now. I am changing my packaging to make it a little more accessible and making it, instead of making 10 fucking seasonal vermouths a year. why did I do that, you guys?
Micro seasons. 10 micro seasons a year.
I'm going to be releasing a sweet and a dry, still to my rigid snob standards, of course.
Yeah, let's talk about those real fast, because I don't think people are aware of, well, maybe they don't know who you are at all, but
she said dick fucking shit.
Show. Yeah, so you're on a roll. You're chasing Giuseppe Gonzalez right now.
This is why I need to be rich, not famous.
Yeah, sadly, the two are hand in hand at all times. you are rigid about your standards and in the end, in the best possible way. But can you talk about that a little bit? Like, what do you mean when you say that you're rigid? Like,
so I don't add any sweeteners. So if it is a sweet vermouth, that means that there's either a fruit ingredient. Basically, it means there's a fruit ingredient. So it's either from the grapes, sugar from grapes. Or it means there's pears. Pears are handy because they contain sorbitol, which is an unfermentable sugar. So, you know, even if that's why perries are, you know, generally a little fruitier than a dry cider would be,
sure.
Even at the same alcohol percentage, you know, and so on and so forth. So all of the plants are real plants. They come from the ground. Almost 100% of them are picked by me, either foraged or farmed. There are a few ingredients, such as pears. I use them a lot because maybe they're my favorite. But in France, they say you plant pears for your grandchildren, and it takes roughly, you know, 40 years for a pear tree to mature. So there are ways around that, of course. You can graft. You can, you know, buy trees that are a little more mature. You know, there are ways to kind of... pull the flowers, force the roots, you know, get more fruit out of it. But the reality is, if you just buy pears from your buddy down the road who bought, you know, a 100-year-old farm, you're going to have better fruit, and it'll save you a lot of work, which is what I'm trying to do right now, is get more of my life back and stop working all the time physically. So
that's the goal.
Yeah, that's the goal. But, you know, all of the grapes... are coming from either Long Island or the Finger Lakes. Every ingredient I use is from New York. I have an immense amount of New York pride. And I think that people always assume that we live in like this dirty little city, but it's a big fucking state that's mostly forest and farmland.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and I'm trying to raise more awareness. Also, I think it's really important that people learn that vermouth is wine and it isn't an herbal syrup. It isn't liqueur. It's not a you know, mixer necessarily, although if anything can be. I would never hold anyone back creatively, of course. But, you know, I think that knowing what it is that you're putting in your face is very important. And it's something that is most often overlooked in our adult community.
Yeah, I agree.
Adult community makes it sound like a nude beach.
Slap like two dirty old men.
I'm into both. Yeah, we did.
That's because I'm sitting here topless.
Yes. Yep. It's topless in the studio today.
I think we got a show today.
It's Whip 'em Out Wednesday. Fucking Dave.
Dave. So you're super stringent about what goes into your face, and that translates to what goes into the bottles that you produce for other people's faces, is basically what you're saying.
Yes, I take it very seriously that I'm making something meant to be ingested by humans.
Yeah.
And dogs, depending on how, you know.
How liberal your household is.
Right.
When you talk, I listen to you, and I hear that there's obviously a great deal of experience going on in the things that you say, based on how long you've had Uncouth, which is, how old is it again?
So Uncouth Vermouth is 5 years old.
It's 5 years old.
Yeah.
But I hear when you speak, you use terms and words that make me understand that. Do you have an education in this? Do you have a background in like chemistry or horticulture or both? Or?
I mean, I grew up with a plant whisperer for a mother.
Yep.
An alcoholic father. And reflectively speaking, I think we are our parents, right?
Sure.
I didn't go to college, but I moved to Oregon. Spent my formative 20s working in wineries and on all sides of the business. You know, I foraged. I've always foraged, actually, my whole life. And that's mainly because I grew up with my insane mother, who after...
She's awesome, by the way. I've met her. She's great. She may be a little crazy, but, you know, she's earned it.
She threw me out of the house the middle of my senior year of high school, and the next day turned my childhood bedroom into an internationally awarded orchid growing room. Like, she just fucking, like, instantly became this, like, badass orchid grower, like, competing, like, all over the world. And she was like, this house isn't big enough for the both of us. I think she really wanted an orchid room.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, she's scary and awesome. And, you know, it was very important in my family on both sides to work for yourself. Nobody was going to pay for you to go to college. Nobody gave a fuck. My parents very much practiced a get the fuck out of the house and call us if you're bleeding. And you better really be bleeding. So, you know, it was a lot of, you know, self-sufficiency and being an adult who, you know, had to start working full-time 3 days after graduating high school. It was very obvious to me that I was going to have to, you know, learn as much as I could. And when I was 20, I decided to start following, you know, what I was actually interested in, which most people that age don't have that freedom. And I think it's a weird way of putting it that it was freedom because it was actually, you know, also what I had to do.
Sort of forced freedom. You were right. Forced into that freedom.
Yeah, but I had a very unorthodox path. Ended up working in, you know, more than 24 wineries and soaking everything up like a little fucking sponge. You know, I now am one of those weirdos, and there are only very few of us in the industry who work with as many plants as I do and turn them into alcohol. So that's kind of fun, and I think more and more people are getting into it, more domestic Amari, more, you know, it's getting pretty cool. I was just talking about, what's the name of that one from South Carolina?
High Wire.
So fucking good, you
know?
Yeah,
Southern Amaro.
It's my favorite.
It's really delicious.
It's so fucking good. Like and
cola.
Yeah, and there are more plant nerds coming out into the booze industry, which gives me more friends, and let's face it, that's hard. So...
Yeah, you're bristly.
So unorthodox path, but I've been in this industry for 16 years.
Wow.
I'm 56, so, yeah. You know.
It's the vermouth that's keeping you looking so young. Speaking of vermouth, you've brought a bottle here for us, one of your 10 micro-seasonal flavors. Which one is it?
This is the second-to-last one that you'll ever see in this packaging. It's batch 8 of vermouth. you know, they don't have names, so I often refer to a couple of ingredients I'm willing to admit to, right?
Sure.
So. Right, which I think that's a common practice among vermouth makers, Amari makers. You're stingy with the ingredients list.
Yeah.
Although we were actually, just before the show, we were talking about Highwire. We're sitting at the bar here at Roberto's, and I just saw the mic drop.
Oh, right.
Whiskey from Nicholas Palazzi, and it's quite the opposite. Like, I just want to give him a shout out. I haven't seen him in a while, but it's so cool. It's like the it's pretty much the opposite. It's a very transparent packaging with like everything listed, like almost to a comical level, right?
It is the most transparent bulk alcohol sourced bourbon on the market. Nicola Palazzi owns PM Spirits, which is far and away the most badass booze importer and distributor in the U.S. He used to hold those dope hooch studies in basements of bars in, you know, downtown Manhattan, where he would bring over like these fucking crazy bottles that, you know, there would be two of, and it would be like a 30-year-old like single malt that nobody had ever heard of before. Yeah. And he would just put the bottle down and tell everybody exactly how much it cost him to buy it. And he broke it down by the ounce, and he left out an ounce pourer and a fishbowl for cash. And you just paid for what you drank on the honor system. Yeah. This was how I met him. This was years and years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, every year I feel like that company just gets more and more fucking cool.
Yeah. Well, it makes perfect sense to me that you're like a fan and also a friend of his and that company, because you're both like, there's kind of like a giant, like very like refreshing air of fuck you guys that both of you share.
We give no fucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is exactly what you said. Super refreshing. It's great to
it's
know.
It's refreshing.
It's great like, to know that people are out there just going to be like brass tacks all the time. Like
he is a strong rebel army.
Yeah, man.
Okay, totally. So you didn't even get to the secret that you were.
Oh,
gonna,
yeah, sorry.
You said I'm not going to tell you everything, and then you told us nothing. What are we about to drink?
Well, okay. So I keep talking about pears because I keep staring at this fucking vermouth, but this is a pear vermouth. Basically, it has some young ginger in it. That comes from a biodynamic family farm right outside of Hunter Mountain. Hmm. They dig 4 feet down, and heat and humidity control the ginger in a hoop house. So they can have like a self-sufficient fucking ecosystem growing these tropical roots.
Crazy.
Yeah, they're super cool. And I'm not telling you who they are because... That's mine. and then the pears come from mostly Blooming Hill Farm, which is in Blooming Grove, New York. Guy Jones and Sons, a really amazing crew who supply a lot of very nice restaurants in the city as well. And then everything else, you know, there's around like 20 plants in everything I make. And everything else came from my farm or forage nearby, including one of the species of pears was a wild pear, actually, that I foraged about 5 miles from my farm.
Wow.
Cool. I love pear, man. It's my favorite.
Well, yeah, you've been making a pear bitters for about a decade now.
Yeah. For Primes, yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I love it with... It's fucking awesome with anything, man.
Yeah.
It really is. I think so, too. I think pears are super cool. Pears changed everything that I... thought I knew about fermentation a couple summers ago. I was out with my friend at one of our secret spots, and you know, foragers are thieves, and are the, you know, the vaults we rob, so to speak, are secrets. And so we were out at a spot that we share, and the refractometer was reading 32 bricks on a pear that was, you know, the size of half my palm, that tasted super fucking tart, no possible detection of any sugars. And just to give you guys an idea from a fermenter's perspective, that's bullshit high for a fucking tart piece of fruit.
Right.
You know, usually people assume the riper the fruit, you know, the more sugars, the better the fermentation, whatever, you know. And anyway, these pears by themselves fermented beautifully into an awesome perry, but I also used some in this vermouth, and you know, it's crazy because it taught me that, you know, tasting and taking a Brix reading isn't necessarily the best way to gauge how something is going to ferment. And that's fucked up because for, you know, 15 years prior to that, I had been taught something very, very different. So anyway, pears, like,
did you know going into that, that pears had that unfermentable sugar?
Yes, I did. I did know that.
Does that then fuck
well,
up?
The Brix reading is pre-fermentation.
Sure, of course. So the Brix reading I get, but does that alter our perception on palate of how something tastes? Because you're saying it's reading this crazy sweet, but it's tasting tart. Is it because that sugar is sort of...
Is it just because it was super
a
acidic?
Unique style of sugar?
Or?
Well, there's generally more than one type of sugar in every fruit.
Oh, yeah,
so,
of course.
You know, I guess, I'm thinking it out. The answer is I don't know.
Yeah.
Honestly, because there are like dessert pears, you know, that read like 23, you know, and are super sweet. So it's tough to like what actually I guess what I'm saying is we don't fucking know. Right. Obviously, right. Thanks to pears, we have no idea. And
fucking pears.
I would love to
rebel fruit.
Learn more about it. I know, right?
This is delicious, and I definitely get that sort of backgroundy notes of ginger, which I was that first sip I took as you were describing it. I was already fishing around in my brain to be like, what is this flavor in this vermouth? And then you said ginger, and I was like, there it is.
It's like a really soft, subtle, like sweet ginger.
It's not like
it's young, so it's more fragrant than it is.
I was about to say, the longer it sits here in the glass, I'm smelling it more too. Yeah,
yeah. I think it's interesting. Like, reading the Brix level from the hydrometer, it's like. Or sorry, from the refractometer, it's like there's also depending on the spirits. Like you can read the alcohol percentage from a hydrometer, and it might be 112 proof, but it tastes like it's 80. So it's like you kind of just have to trust your palate.
And it depends on what's in it too. Like if people are adding, you know, sugar or propylene glycol or anything, then you're not going to get an accurate reading.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, it's, booze is weird, you guys. Booze is science.
Well, that's a pretty good time to take
alcohol
a break.
Is a solution in the science world. That's true. Let's cut away for a break here from our sponsors. We're going to come right back with Bianca from Uncouth Vermouth, and then we're going to unveil. Are we the first people to even talk about this?
Yeah.
Oh, good. We got a great unveil for you.
Got the scoop.
Yeah, right after the break. And in the meantime, Dave, we accidentally brought 4 glasses, so there's a glass of vermouth in here for you. So come get it while we're on the break.
All right,
we'll be right back.
I went down to North Carolina. Realized there was surely nothing finer. Hopped into a tiny highway diner.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network, and we have our friend Bianca in here. We just had some of her vermouth. We just dropped a bunch of F-bombs and talked about foraging and stealing from your own vault of land.
Or sometimes from someone else's.
Cool, yeah. And then like right before the break, we just talked about you have a new product coming out. This is very exciting.
It's super exciting on a lot of levels. Oh my gosh, let's do this thing.
Yeah, fucking tell us what it is.
It's lasagna levels of exciting, onions of layers.
Lasagna level exciting. All right.
Lasagna is very exciting.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I love, we're always excited when we see the unmarked flask. So yeah. That's what you got right now. Unmarked flask.
All right. Well, I'll hold it up to the light. A year and a half ago, I came up with this weird idea and teamed up with my dear friend Adam Ford from Atsby Vermouth. And it's not a vermouth, I'm going to say that right now.
But it is herbal.
I'm just going to stop talking.
Yeah, we're pouring it right now. Okay, well, there's some visual cues here that are very interesting.
So we're like, yeah, let's make some shit together or whatever.
Damon?
We're friends.
It's fucking purple, man.
It's not. It's not purple. Don't say purple.
It's blue.
Well, I'm colorblind, but it's not the normal color.
So I wanted to make a drinking bitters, something local made, even if it used exotic ingredients, which is different for me, but they're still very well sourced. And I wanted to make it an interesting color. So me and Adam are like, let's make it blue. And then I did a bunch of research,
I think it's important to note here that you've done it. It's blue, right?
Right.
And you did this, and I think we set this up perfectly in the last segment. You did this using your very stringent set of standards.
So it's organic and it's all natural. The ingredients are not the booze is New York sourced. The aromatic plants are. Some of them are quite exotic, but they're well-sourced exotic plants. And this is actually sweetened with organic cane sugar. So this is for everybody. You know, this is definitely a higher quality drinking bitters than most distilleries are putting out. So I will own the quality level is supremely high. But I was wanting to make like a really fucking good drinking bitters, and you know, I needed to let myself experiment with stuff that I'm not always working with all the time. I didn't want this to taste like my vermouth, you know. I wanted this to taste like the world, and the internet told me you can't make it blue.
Which every, I'm sure just that set you on the path to make it blue, right?
Yeah, like I listened to that fucking Radiolab show that told me I couldn't make it blue. Everybody was telling me I couldn't make it blue. Kind of like how everybody told me I couldn't make vermouth without like citrus and vanilla and sweeteners. So I got really mad and wanted to figure it out anyway. And the coolest part about this is. Everything in here is a plant, and the coolest part is when you change the pH environment, like add lemon juice or tonic or whatever you want, it stays blue. It doesn't turn purple or pink, and then later yellow and brown. You can make batched drinks with it. So it's kind of a little recipe replacer for any drinking bitters, curacao, you know, whatever you want to do with it. It's pretty versatile, which is cool. And so I leave it nice and dark so that it's more like Amaro on its own. And then the more you dilute it or lighten it, it actually gets bluer. Amazing. And then it eventually kind of, you know, the saturation lightens the more you lighten it. So you can, you know, make like... a martini and have it, you know, look sapphired with just a tiny splash of this stuff, or you can make yourself like a blue Negroni using gin and a white vermouth, and you know, it's absolutely beautiful. And then eventually the more you dilute it, the more it turns kind of like a dress shirt blue, I guess. So it's real blue, it's not neon. And I mean I think that it smells like I made it, but it's obviously ingredients you know, some familiar and some you'll never figure out. And that's what I do.
I know. It's a very old world style that you have of hiding your ingredients behind a shroud of mystery.
I'm 5,600 years old.
And intrigue. Yeah, you just, yeah. tenfolded your age in 30 minutes. You were 56 a minute ago. So, and it has a name.
It does. So we've branded it Uccelli. Uccelli, U-C-C-E-L-L-I, aperitivo. It is the Italian word for birds. And we found this to be appropriate. You know, I'm Italian, and I wanted to make something that was like an Italian drinking bitters, you know, like all of those classic favorites that are standards in all of our homes. And I wanted something that felt like it belonged among those classics, and wanted something that was kind of a nod to the OG cocktail scene. And so, you know, people have been making naturally colored blue drinks since the 1850s, but they were using coal tar. Thank you, Karen Newman, by the way. That was from your Eater article.
Coal tar?
That little fact. Yeah, coal tar in the 1850s. So,
well, people used to brush their teeth with coal, so I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, I read Kara's article and went into, like, a fucking wormhole, as I do. And this was after I had already... figured it out or whatever. And so it's cool. It's blue drinks have been around, you know, for as long as red drinks. And, it's pretty exciting, to introduce one that is not poison. Unless of course we're talking about alcohol in general, which is poison, you know. Sure. the only reason it works on us is because we're all allergic.
Indeed.
And the word edible, by the way, is utter bullshit, because everything is toxic. Every single plant contains toxins. It's just a level of whether or not our bodies, are going to react poorly to those toxins. So, I just want to say that too, just on a higher food education note.
Nice. thanks for making me afraid of bananas. No, but this is great. You want to talk about some flavor notes without giving away too many things?
Yeah, I wanted it to taste. I overused the word fresh, and I wanted.
I don't know that word can ever be overused, huh?
Yeah, I wanted it to feel like you're getting a break. You know, I think that people drink as a coping mechanism. And, you know, I wanted something that was going to evoke happy feelings, and I wanted something that was mesmerizing to look at, and something that somebody could, you know, mull over and you know, hopefully pull some positive feelings from the color and the aromas. You know, I wanted it to lighten you.
So I immediately
totally danced around the issue, but yes, yeah. It does all that.
I'm not gonna tell you what's in it.
I'm gathering that as we go.
You can guess, and I'll confirm or deny.
Okay. Well, before I try guessing, I just want to say, so it's important, I think, for the listener to understand that what you just described about making this thing blue and have it stay blue even when the pH changes, that's groundbreaking. Nobody else has been able to do that, right?
Yeah, I didn't want to say that part though.
What, you want
yeah,
me,
let us say
you,
that.
Yeah, you guys want, can say that.
Are we blowing your horn here?
Yeah, okay, I'm turning cool. Red. Not blue.
Hey-o. This is a groundbreaking process that you've created. So
yeah,
proprietary totally. Ingredients, of course.
Yeah.
But nobody else has done this naturally. Correct. And have the things, and even a lot of the unnatural ones that are different colors, they will change color once and the pH level or the acid level changes, right? So yours
correct.
Does not.
That's
so that's
correct.
a big thing.
Yeah,
you
everybody's
be proud of
using,
yourself. You look very.
Thanks.
You're being shy all of a sudden. It's
no,
not,
that's
it's not
true.
Your nature.
You're putting me in my weird place. no, that all of all, it's all true. It's all true. It's cool. I'm really happy about it. I'm obsessed with these little fucking birdies. I think that, you know, we started together. I feel like all of us at a young age, you know, working with. Junk food, booze, and later and later in life, we're becoming more and more, you know, spoiled with higher quality alcohol. And so we started, I feel like, as a cocktail revolution, right? And now I feel like we're in a cocktail evolution. And I think that, you know, people are wondering more and more where their nice label bourbon is coming from, and whether it's actually distilled at the place, you know, that's putting the sticker on it. And,
Yeah. You
know, almost 100% of the time, that's not the case, you know, and I think that as we grow more and more educated as a, you know, booze community, and you guys being on the front line are the educators for, you know, the masses, I think that it's nice to, you know, have something that can be super fun and make fucking blue drinks, and you can, you know, serve it in good conscience, you know?
Yeah.
I love that mentality.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like, it's also, I personally connect with this on a different level, because like a couple of, maybe a year and a half ago, maybe it was like, maybe the last time you were on the show, I was running this menu. I had in the spring of 2016, I had a menu that was completely a themed menu, which was all pink drinks. And it was to show, it was a personal crusade, basically. It was like, all right, so what can I use to make drinks pink that are like classic ingredients? And it was Peychaud's, Angostura, Campari, Aperol. Those are all bitter. So like, I was like, you know what? Just because it's pink or red doesn't mean it's sweet or fruity.
Right.
And so for this side of it, I've always loved blue drinks. And so to have something like this that's like blue and not like neon blue, like you said before, but like a true blue. True blue.
True blue.
True blue. And have it be something that is like herbaceous and bitter and slightly floral, and to be able to use that in the cocktail. It's
exciting.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, I want to get behind it too. And you know, not to mention somewhat timely. I'm sure that that's not in the front of your brain to think about, like,
yeah, because like
trending, but like blue drinks are kind of trending right now.
Yeah,
and most of them are made with, you know, probably chemically driven,
yeah,
things that aren't nice to our bodies.
Yeah,
but we accept them completely, because we're like, oh, it's blue. And also like, oh, the alcohol's already poisoned, like you said, so it doesn't matter, yeah, if you've added extra poison to the poison that I'm already taking.
For sure.
But it's a great opportunity to have something. And frankly, I didn't really think of it too much, but because I'm colorblind, it doesn't really come to my mind first. But once it's in a bottle and on the shelf, I'll have it at Amore Margo, and we'll have a new color in our palette over there, which is generally pretty much just brown.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All my drinks are brown or kind of red. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe you have Midori on your back bar. So.
Me?
Yeah, don't you?
Hell no.
Or there's got to be something green. Anyway, I can make
Chartreuse.
I can make all the colors now. It's really fun. you know, but yes, I appreciate you guys understanding that it's not generally, you know, my mission to figure out what's trendy and jump on board. You know, I'm...
No, I mean, if we looked at your record, I think that, yeah, the opposite would stand out. Oh, she's trying to just go 100% against everything that everyone's trying to do. You're swimming upstream at all times.
Yeah, it's true. Why am I popular? So I feel like I feel like this is like one of those weird things where people are going to be like, wait, she made this, like, because it's so a here you go to every bartender, like every bartender, including, you know, myself in the 10 Years a Slave, like every bartender loves blue drinks. Every single one of us does, you know. So I've always had a thing for, you know, the color blue in drinks, and this was, you know, before I was of an age where I knew that it was, yeah, a breaking chair.
My broken chair.
Oh, wait, this chair might break underneath Damon during this show.
I love this fucking chair. Old bluey.
That's right.
I'm just waiting for the day.
It cracked a little earlier.
Yeah, Dave wants to throw it away.
But yeah, everybody else who's making naturally colored blue drinks, you know, they're either using laboratory, you know, anthocyanins, like the Spanish blue wine, or they're using...
I love it when you talk nerdy.
Butterfly pea flower.
Yeah, that's the one everybody uses, but it changes color dramatically once acid is added, so it's like pointless.
It's pointless, right. So you only see the blue for like a second, and then also it's not... you know, I mean, eventually that, you know, that stuff, it's always going to change on you. And, yeah, I also I know that Americans aren't usually used to this, but there are a lot of gins that are colored with poisonous geraniums, but those are only sold in Europe. They're not actually allowed to be sold in the U.S., which is like one of those times the FDA pulls through. But yeah, it's weird. It's definitely weird. But you know, it's a household brand. It doesn't have, you know, my my name on it or my face picking my nose. So I kind of made it for everybody. You know what I mean? Cool. I wanted to make something for everyone.
I guess I'm trying to ask, like, if you, like during this process, because, like, when I've developed spirits in the past, I always, as you're going through the different tastings, different botanical profiles, like, you're also testing out with cocktails because you know that it's going to end up in cocktails anyway.
For sure. Absolutely.
What did you have in mind as far as, like...
Can we call them cunt tails? Just while I'm here.
Yeah, sure. What kind of cunt tail did you have in mind?
You're the best.
Well, I mentioned the Blue Negroni option, which you just use white vermouth,
sure.
And you use Uccelli in place of Campari. Mm-hmm. And... a really awesome blue martini if you make it a classic style 50-50 with mm-hmm. gin, just a blue martini or Uccelli cocktail, basically. I personally love what I call the Uccelli Frizzanti, which is just half and half with sparkling wine.
That's exactly where my mind
is. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So
you know what? I think we've talked about this before. That's kind of... Weirdly, that's one of the first places I go.
Yeah. A Frizzanti is better than a spritz, you know?
Totally.
It's just sparkling wine and bitters.
Yeah, whenever I grab something, anything that I haven't worked with before, the first thing I do is like be like, okay, let's just add it to some champagne and see what happens.
Right.
Totally, man.
And then you can start like picking apart and see where you want to go from there. But like add some bubble, add some length, maybe on ice. That's the first step.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree.
And that does sound great, by the way. This is
yeah.
got such a really floral aroma, like,
but it's not girly, right?
No.
I think it's pretty fucking gender fluid.
Yeah, well, I've always thought all the fluids were gender fluid.
I agree. And we're all blue on the inside.
Oh, is that gonna be on the label?
God, hey, all right. Damn it.
I'm not allowed to make this a dirty hippie brand, you know? It's a fucking instant classic, you guys. Look at it.
Oh my god, why don't you have your own show, man? You're very good at
yeah,
this.
Yeah, guys, bad news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More bad news for us.
Once
more
the chair breaks.
Yeah. Oh shit.
Turning the screw.
That's your hourglass. Once the chair's done.
You're doing this on purpose? Dave, why?
Never.
It was Souther's idea.
Yeah.
Oh man.
The saboteur.
Yeah, he's been muscling in.
Hey, actually, you know what? It's fine. Because actually, as of yesterday, which was repeal day.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to talk about repeal day.
That marked my seventh year with Heritage Radio Network.
I'll be damned. Yeah, that's man. Right.
Yeah. It was, there he is. But you know what? If I'm getting the boot from with anyone replacing me, you're my first pick.
Yeah, Bianca.
I mean, actually.
The Bianca
you don't have
show.
To say that just because I'm sitting pick, here without a shirt on.
I mean, I'll take second seat to Bianca anytime.
But it's
7 years. Amazing. Years,
and repeal day.
Wow.
Did you, by the way, did any of you do any like ding-dongery, like repeal day party kind of shit?
So Max.
I try to avoid it.
Max decided to be out of town. Yesterday and today and tomorrow. He's in L.A. Good for him. He took a little vacation. He probably deserves it.
Max is Souther's personal assistant.
Well, not anymore. But for dealing with me as much as he does, he deserved a little breakaway. So I worked for him last night at Amore, and frankly, we were slow. And I think I looked back on other repeal days while I was kind of hanging out. I mean, we weren't dead. Amore's always kind of busy. But for our normal numbers, it was a little low. And I think it was because it was raining, so the cocktail nerds weren't coming out. Or rather, the regular guests weren't coming out. And I think because there were so many repeal day events going on, that's where the cocktail nerds were. Some of them flowed by late night, you know, sort of at the end of my night, all dressed up and fancy. And I'm kind of envious of that. I think it's the one sort of underappreciated celebratory event that's kind of built for us. And, you know, I usually do things on it and go to events and hang out with our ilk. But I didn't get to last night. But that's okay.
I quietly celebrate it. I was at my bar working last night, and I was just like, you know what? Like, occasionally, like,
here's
when
to repeal day. Yeah,
here's
exactly.
Here's repeal day, you know? Like, this is for us. Like, we're doing exactly what we,
you know
what
crazy?
We're allowed to do. But that I had a fucking crazy night last night.
Oh,
like,
yeah?
I was busy. I had, like, a who's who of, like, New York bar people in my bar all at once, and I was just like,
drop names, drop names.
Brian and then Miller was the there.
Drop good names.
Danny Neff was there.
I didn't even really drop names. It's kind
of like, yeah, it was just like a bunch of But it was like, it was crazy. It was like they were all there at the bar at the same time, and they were like, you know what? We didn't want to go to a like a repeal day party. We just wanted to go to like make a good bar,
make one of our own. Yeah,
and so and it ended up being that. And
yeah,
it was
that's
really
great.
Cool.
Yeah,
just for that, you made them a Gilmore Girls drink.
Oh yeah, man.
Yeah,
I took it back to the summer menu.
I love your themed menus. I was polling the audience a little bit as the night went on, and you know, it's really sad isn't the right word, because I don't think it's a thing that necessarily needs a whole lot of spotlight. I don't want it to turn into a Hallmark thing, you know.
Like repeal day.
But yeah, but I was polling the audience, and I would say, I don't know, maybe if I'm lucky, a third of them even knew what it was.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you guys doing out on repeal day tonight?
Like, I've been sitting here quietly because I don't know what you guys are talking about.
How could you not know? You were alive then. You were alive 84 yeah, exactly. years ago.
I think you were probably the Carrie Nation's like...
Hatchet woman? Like,
sharpen your hatchet.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so happy repeal day to everyone.
Yeah, indeed. On that note. 84 years of... drinking free.
The reason we have jobs, yeah.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. Yeah, you know, that's the thing I celebrate about it, is like, if it hadn't happened, well, I mean, where would this country be in general? But certainly we wouldn't have a job.
That's like, why that's why I always work on it, just like on that day, you know?
Yeah. It's a Labor Day that we should be laboring. Yeah. Up yours, Max.
yeah, have a great trip, Max.
Yeah, enjoy L.A. Yeah,
enjoy it.
I will mention real quick, Max is no longer my personal assistant. I hired an actual real-life bona fide personal assistant who does that job for a living, and I feel real weird about it. She started on Monday.
It's going to feel weirder when her check bounces.
I pay her in cash. Cash don't bounce. It's strange.
Coins like, do.
It's Bitcoin.
Legal tender.
Who the fuck am I to have a personal assistant, you know? But suddenly I realize... I just can't keep up with what I'm doing. And the fact of the matter is, I really do foresee her being able to create a space that the things that she does for me will end up paying for themselves. Right? Yeah. She'll get me gigs that I don't have time to get. And she'll clear my schedule by doing things that I would be doing in those times so that I can do that gig.
Are you afraid like I am to check your email?
Oh, 100%. I thought we've talked about this.
But not on air. He's trying to make it genuine conversation.
Sure. I have a... this has been going on for almost 2 years. I have a total fear of email. I can't open my own. Max has to open it for me. He'll just open it and then text it to me and I'm fine. But I can't open the email. Going further, I can't open my own mailbox.
It's the worst.
I've looked it up. There is no named fear of mail, but I have it.
We both have it.
It's totally irrational. I have no reason to be afraid of it. Nothing ever terrible has come out of the email or the mail, but I can't open it.
That's not true.
I mean, nothing.
Every once in a while, spiders. There'll be a bomb or a virus or something.
Well, that kind of thing, of course. But I mean, like, nothing in my life has ever been so traumatic. I don't know what it is. It's crazy. It's very irrational. Max hates me for it. Carrie is totally okay with it. My editor hates me for it to some degree because he has to text me everything. Like I said, I do everything on my phone, you know. Yeah,
I get it. Well, this has been a great show.
It's been awesome. Hey, listen, we're being honest. We're talking about things.
No, I'm being honest.
We're drinking blue drinks.
Yeah, man. That's what I'm saying. We checked all the boxes. Yeah, we've checked all the boxes today.
It's Whip It Out Wednesday, according to Bianca. so this
I
is
think
exciting
the people
stuff.
Eating pizza are pretty excited about it.
Yeah. Wow, it's crowded out there today. So you said off the air, I think you'll be bottling this stuff on the 18th. Bottling and labeling. When will it be on shelves in New York? And then from there, I don't even know how things work with distributorship. Does this just pop right into your distributorship with everything else, or how does that work?
Do
markets have to pick it up?
Uncouth Vermouth is distributed through Selección Masal. I used to self-distribute, which you can only do, I could only do legally in the state of New York. So for the first few hundred cases, we will be self-distributing Uccelli. And because we don't have that much, I mean, we have a lot more on the way. This isn't something that's going to be, you know, super limited like Uncouth. We're, you know, building it to be a proper-sized product circulation. And so... initially, I think the best thing for everybody to do would be to email us or find us on social media, Uccelli Aperitivo
at Gmail
Works, Uccelli Aperitivo.
I liked how sing-songy that was.
Oh, yesterday I was working on my radio voice, guys.
Oh, were you? I should work on mine.
And then Aster.
Damon's got it.
I'm working on my radio face.
Yeah. Aster Wines and Spirits. I don't know what their official name is. You know, Aster, the fucking biggest, awesomest, independently owned.
I tell people all the time that people are like, where can I get the... I'm like, you live in New York. The answer is Aster.
Exactly.
And I said, Aster's probably the best liquor store in New York City. Meaning, it's likely the best liquor store in the world.
Completely.
Like, that's where you need to go. When in doubt, Aster.
Absolutely. So you can pre-order through them.
Yeah.
If I know, seriously, and thank you, because they're also the best. You can pre-order through them. I'm sure Souther is going to have it at Amore Amargo. I'm sure Damon's going to have it at Blue Grand Drinks. Army. And we're gonna take it from there. But you know, we want everybody to have it, and you know, we're working to scale up as quickly as possible, and hoping to have everything on shelves within the close of 2017.
Cool.
That's like 3 weeks away.
It's berserk. I know. It's berserk. I'm like shitting out of my dick right now.
I mean, the eighth.
Puking out my butt. I'm just gonna keep saying things to fumble you. the
colorful language of Bianca. Mind blown. Yeah, that's fast. I mean, obviously the R&D and creating of this thing wasn't so fast, but the hustling it to the shelf is going to be pretty quick.
Yeah, a year and a half since inception, it'll be going on shelves. It's pretty fast, but you know, I mean, we knew what we were doing, and you know, managed to just work. You know, it's amazing if you keep your head down how much work you can get done.
Yeah, for sure.
Agreed. Speaking of work and getting work done, let's talk about the opposite of that. When's the last time Bianca took any sort of vacation for herself?
Never.
Okay.
Never ago.
Are you going to try and get that done in 2018?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get a lot of my time back, and I need to start spending more and more time traveling to make other stuff. I think that you know, moving into two vermouths and launching the birds, and you know, having a solid team in place is going to put me in a position to keep making, you know, more and more shit that you guys may or may not like.
That's awesome.
That's great. Yeah.
I want to see you take some breaks. And you know, I'm probably the worst person to listen to about that, because I don't do it either. But
yeah, I'll text you about that later.
We should. You text my assistant; she'll take care of it. Carrie Johnson's her name, by the way. She's awesome. Well, Bianca, it's been great having you on the show to talk about Uccelli, your new blue. I want to touch on this. I was thinking about it while you were saying it, but then I got lost with your colorful language. You mentioned more than once that this is a drinking bitters. Are you trying to steer away from the word Amaro for any particular reason?
No,
or
no, I think it's squares and rectangles, man. I think Amaro is drinking bitters.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So I think it's squares and rectangles. But I do think that the word Amaro, you know, which won't be going on the bottle aperitivo, bitter aperitivo, will be the desired language, so to speak. That also aligns with compliance. You know, it leads you to think of something brown and
I agree. Yeah.
You know,
our minds pigeonhole these things. I get it.
Yeah, and the whole point of this, you know, thing being fucking blue is to open our minds, right? And my brother always used to say, "Nowhere is now here," and I try to think about that all the time when I'm applying it to my own creativity. Great. Can I leave on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm out.
That's it. Mic drop. Well, thanks for being with us again. You can find Bianca at Uncouth Vermouth and Uccelli Aperitivo. uccelli.com?
And our website's kind of like under construction, but uccelliaperitivo@gmail.com, uccelliaperitivo on Instagram, uccelliaperitivo on Facebook. I'm the world's easiest person to find as well if you just want to get in touch with me about it and you forget the name. Anything uncouth vermouth goes directly to me, person who doesn't have a personal assistant.
Maybe you should get one. I've had one for 2 days.
Damon, when that chair breaks, I hear you're not going to have a show anymore. You have some time freeing up.
Yeah.
I thought Jacob Cheddar was your personal assistant.
Oh, man.
Man, talk about reverse production.
I don't believe in hierarchy. Jacob works with me, not for me.
Well, so great to have you on again, and so great to see this new product, and I can't wait to get it on the shelf at Amore Margo. I will blast it out all over my media when I do, because Instagram, why not? I'm going to read off some of the upcoming shows in no particular order. We've got Willie Shine coming in from, he works with Jägermeister, the team from Jupiter Disco, Alan, Max Pazuniak, Alsotek and Max Pazuniak. Rob Morton's going to come on from Critical Mass. Giuseppe Gallo is going to come on and talk about Italicus. Alan Katz is going to be on. Sammy Ross from Attaboy. So a lot of great folks coming
John
on. John Thibault, awesome. We're going to get on the show. Yeah.
Just with his awesome book.
Books. You love books.
I love books.
So that's the upcoming calendar. Of course, we're coming up on holidays, but I think we're clear. We're not closed or anything like that at the studio. So we'll be here.
Yeah.
That's all I got, Damon.
Great, man. We've got a lot of great shows coming up. We've had a lot of great shows over the last year. We're coming up on the end of the year, and I feel very thankful.
Me too, yeah, man. This has been a great time.
Yeah, cheers to that. All right, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs just like this one, except not as good.
Zing!
And then we'll see you next week. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers, guys.
Bing. Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Man.